What is happening, y'all? Today, I got to speak with Quinn Kwan, the head of Web3 strategy at D-Labs Games. D-Labs Games is a South Korean-based game development and publishing company that focuses on delivering high-quality and engaging games in Web3. Their aim is to offer exceptional graphics and immersive gameplay experiences to all players, regardless of their knowledge about NFTs, wallets, or cryptocurrencies. Currently, D-Labs is developing 3 blockchain-native games, including its soon-to-be-launched kart racing game called Rumble Racing Star. It's also developing 2 role-playing games called Metabolts and Space Frontier. On this episode, Quinn and I really just talked about Rumble Racing Star, but you can definitely go check out their website, which I will have in the show notes, to see the trailers for Metabolts and Space Frontier. They're offering a variety of different games, so... You know, I know not everybody likes to play. People have their genre preferences, myself included. And so sometimes you see a company, or maybe we've had guests on the podcast where they only have one type of game. And so you go, oh, it's not for me. I don't want to play it. Well, this is really cool because they have 3 totally different types of games. And so I think there's a little bit of something for everyone here. So I'd highly encourage you to check it out. I think they got a lot going on. I think they got a good team in place. And again, I think they're working really hard to make sure that they're making a fun-to-play game. That's always what I strive to get on the show, is people who are making fun-to-play games, people who have a history of really enjoying playing games. And I feel really lucky that pretty much every single guest I've gotten to interview has been exactly that. You know, gaming has become this beautiful, wonderful thing that we get to share that is just like massively arching across the world. It's a global phenomenon, and it's amazing in that sense because... You know, it's not hard to do this when you're talking to people about things you love and things you're really engaged in. And so I just feel really lucky to be doing that. I feel really lucky for anybody listening to this, because I think it's really hard in this day and age to get your game out there in front of a crowd. So I'm happy to be doing that, happy to be helping people out, and happy to be having these wonderful, engaging conversations about these games and this emerging industry. So if you're back joining us for another episode, I thank you endlessly. And if this is your first episode, welcome, welcome, friends and gamers. My name is Matthew, and this is the Web3 Gamer. Hey there, folks. Ever looked up at the sky and thought, gee, that sun sure looks dim today? Well, you're not alone. I used to think that the sun was a massive ball of burning gas, but then I joined the Illuminati Society. That's right. The Illuminati Society believes that the sun is in fact a giant light bulb. And guess what? It's due for a change in just 2 short years.
Every 2025 years, like clockwork, the sun dims just a smidge. But don't worry, you've got the tallest ladder in the universe to reach up there and secure a new one.
But we need your help. Light bulbs that big don't come cheap.
For just 3 easy payments of $9.99.99, you can sponsor a photon and ensure the sun keeps on shining for everyone.
And if you call in the next 10 minutes, we'll throw in a free pair of Illuminati-branded sunglasses. Because once we change that bulb, oh boy, it's gonna be bright.
I used to be a skeptic, but then I attended one of their Light Up Your Life seminars, and now I'm a believer. Plus, these sunglasses are super stylish.
So don't be left in the dark. Join the Illuminati Society today and help us keep the world lit.
Because the sun might just be the biggest light bulb idea ever.
Call now. Terms and conditions apply. Ladder not actually capable of reaching the sun. Sunglasses do not provide protection against staring directly at the sun.
Hello, hello, friends and gamers. I am Matthew Simone. I am the Web3 Gamer, and I am here with Quinn from D-Labs. Quinn, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for having me, Matthew.
And you are calling all the way in from South Korea? Am I correct on that?
South Korea.
That must be late over there. It is evening time for y'all because it is morning for me.
Yep, it's around 9 p.m. here, so a little bit late, but not too much. All pretty good.
I'm used to frequently, I've spoken with a couple people in the Philippines and Singapore, and I'm actually used to being the opposite, where I feel like it is 8 a.m. their time and it is 8 to 9 p.m. my time. So this is an interesting reversal on my end for once.
Oh, really? So you talk to a lot of people like in the Philippines area?
Southeast Asia is a really big hub for Web3 gaming right now. Y'all have a lot going on there. Dubai and the Middle East as well. It's feel like there's more going on that side of the world than our side, at least from the people I've spoken to.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting projects like going on in that area.
There's a lot of great conventions. Token 2049 came up and I really seemed very interesting. A lot of things going on. I could not find the time or money to make my way out there, but it seemed very fascinating regardless. But
yeah, it seemed really cool. Actually, right before Token, we had KBW here in Seoul. So we hosted an event then as well. And then I think a lot of people shifted, like right after KBW, they went to Token. So we saw that everyone that we met here, they were all going to Token. We decided not to this year, but heard a lot of people have fun.
Yeah, I can only go off all the people who I'd either people I'd previously spoken to or a lot of newer games and companies I've been following in the Web3 space. A lot of them are posting about it, so it seemed to be a big thing for at least Web3 gaming as far as I could see. But, you know, so I think we've got at least a little bit. We know you're from South Korea, but, you know, do you want to give our listeners just a little bit of your background? How'd you get into this project? Before this project, were you a crypto fan, NFT fan, blockchain fan, or was this your first foray into all of that?
Yeah, I'll kind of give a brief introduction of myself. So hi, I'm Quinn. I'm kind of heading the Web3 strategy division here at D-Labs Games. And actually before joining D-Labs, I come from a traditional like software engineering background, the kind of traditional step of like, I used to work in the Bay Area, just did like software engineering for a big tech company. But then after that, I actually decided to quit. And I've always had my passion in gaming. So, and I did like software engineering, and then I was also kind of an artist myself. So I saw that games could be like, I guess a match of both of my interests. And so I actually like went on to develop an indie game just as a one person developer. So that was kind of my first like delve into gaming, but that's kind of when the whole like P2E scene was coming about, and I was like pretty fascinated. So my start was kind of in gaming and development, and then once I kind of learned about P2E, I was really fascinated. I wanted to know like what this whole like blockchain thing was. So I thought the best way would be to actually just jump into the industry, and how I knew my way was as a like software engineer. So I started working as a software engineer at like another blockchain startup. We were building some DeFi. I did some contract development there as well, kind of started off in the blockchain development space. And then after that, I think it was kind of a natural progression for me to jump back into gaming. And that's kind of when I joined back to D-Labs. And now I'm working on these cool gaming projects here, and I'm pretty excited with what we have to come.
That's awesome. So for the one person team for the indie game you developed, did you develop it all the way to launch, or was it just like a passion project that you just shared with friends?
I did launch it. It didn't really do well.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a pretty good amount of users. I kind of did some updates. I'm still getting reviews on the game, but I wouldn't say it's very successful.
Well, still though, that's a tough thing. I mean, I always am applauded by, even in the traditional sector of gaming, when it's like a 1-4 person team, and it blows my mind, because I'm not even going to pretend I know every step of game development. I can only go from, you know, talking to people like yourself and just my interest in the space for the last like 25 years. But I know that it is, there's a reason you'll see people have teams of anywhere from 20 upwards of 200 plus people, depending on the game. There's a lot that goes into it. So I always applaud anybody who makes any game on their own. And even if they're like, you know, it wasn't a resounding success, it's still, in my opinion, it's still success and an accomplishment to get to that point. So if you want to shamelessly plug it, people can go find it.
Oh, I won't do that here. I think this is my time to plug for Rumble Racing Star and D-Labs. But Yeah, I mean, I think I got a lot of like valuable lessons out of it, both in terms of development and in terms of like getting to know the game market. Mm-hmm. And it's still applicable, like working like at D-Labs, making games with like larger teams. So I think it all added value.
Oh, definitely overall. So then it sounds like you've had a passion for gaming for quite a long time. And so I don't know if you consider do you consider yourself a gamer? And if you did you have any particular games that really resonated with you growing up, or maybe some classics that you always fall back on or currently?
I would definitely consider myself a gamer. I wouldn't consider myself a really hardcore gamer, but I've always had a thing for like casual games, puzzle games, adventure games, those types. I think like one game I always go back to like whenever I have time is Candy Crush. So just those like time killer games I think are really good. Recently, I've been really enjoying Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, like that came out a couple months ago. So I've been playing that a lot. That's been really fun.
Yes, I have to admit, not that I'm a big fan of Zelda, and the Breath of the Wild didn't hit quite as many marks for me as I would have liked. So I was very hesitant with Tears of the Kingdom, but it basically felt like everything I'd wanted out of Breath of the Wild, and I had a lot of fun with it. I'm still having fun with it. I go back and forth, but yeah, it's a good one to pick.
Yeah, I think they really added a lot to Breath of the Wild that like really enhanced the gameplay like to another level. Especially with the crafting and kind of the flexibility that it gives. I think it was really great, and I'm still having a lot of fun. So,
yeah, and that is one thing I will credit Nintendo with doing a really good job of in the past, and even more so it feels in the last few years, that I'm waiting for someone in Web3 to do, which is that Sony kind of tried to do it with Dreams, but that kind of putting creativity in the user's hands of going like, here's the framework, here's everything that's still going on, but like, it's in your hands. I mean, just I'm sure you've seen just on social media the amount of things people have been able to create and do in Tears of the Kingdom is insane, and stuff I never would have thought of. And I just think that's really cool that it feels like, I know options aren't truly limitless, but it feels like the options are limitless just with how much people have done and continue to do with the game.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that's also kind of why like Tears of the Kingdom was really interesting, in that like kind of the creativity and flexibility and like kind of you could say like user generated content ability that it gives also really resonates with like what Web3 has to offer and like kind of the core philosophy behind Web3 projects. I think user generated content and like putting a lot of things back to the hands of the users like is really important, but Tears of the Kingdom did like a really good job in making that easy.
Yeah, definitely. The approach, like when you first start, the approach seems really odd, but it's not hard for people to grasp. I mean, I definitely feel like I was underutilizing it, if anything, until I was watching videos of other people going, oh, I didn't even know I could do this. That makes so again, it's like the creativity was there. It was just figuring out how to operate it, which I think they even said when they released the final trailer, is they were like, we did a poor job of showing how the mechanics worked, and so people weren't that excited until we showed the last trailer and it really clicked, and then they were like, yeah, we're really glad that worked, because we were worried that we knew what we had but we couldn't seem to get everybody to understand what we had. So it's funny you say that it really did create a lot of user generated content, and I always almost wonder if like in other traditional games, if you could almost have like a bank to upload it and be able to download like people's created content. I'm sure people would have done it all the time for all sorts of crazy things. So really, I know we have, y'all have quite a few games coming out, but I know your current one, like really coming up to launch, is Rumble Racing Star. And I didn't know if there's any lore behind that game, or if you want to give us like a general rundown, like how do people play, like pretty much any and all details, like feel free to enlighten us.
Yeah, sure. I'll give like kind of a brief rundown of what Rumble Racing Star is. So it's a casual racing game. It's kind of like it's a really social game and a light casual game you can enjoy with friends. Kind of you can think of Mario Kart or Kart Rider, which is the big like title in Korea, actually are I guess, producer of Rumble Racing Star comes, used to be one of the main directors of Crazy Racing Kart Rider, which like was a really big hit back here in Asia. So he's really the racing game guru here in Korea. But Rumble Racing Star is kind of a casual racing game. It's really easy to catch on. So you use easy like left-right controls. There's a variety of items you can like get on the track, as well as different characters you use that have different skills that you have to use strategically like on the race course in order to win the race. There is also a variety of carts you can choose from that have different abilities and different kind of match with like depending on what kind of racetrack you're racing on. So it's really like a strategic gameplay, but it can be very easy to catch on to. But in order to master, there's a lot of depth in it, in that a lot of strategies involved in matching the carts, characters, and items, as well as add-ons like performance, we call them performance kits, that you can add on to kind of boost your race in a certain direction. So I think it's a casual game, and we're really focusing on the social abilities as well of the game, that so that you can come in, play with your friends. There's also like tournaments that you can enjoy with a wider group of people. So in general, it's a casual game that you can enjoy both lightly, but if you really want to go hardcore, we have those elements there as well.
Sure. And so are you all planning, is it strictly going to be a PC game, mobile game? Are you trying to launch across like multiple platforms, or do you not have that fully not know yet?
So right now, so we did our closed beta back in August, and we launched that on PC. For open beta that is coming up soon, that's also going to be on PC, but we're really pushing to go cross-platform on mobile. So we're also currently like parallel development for the mobile version, and that's probably going to launch sometime before the end of this year.
Okay. And do you want to talk about briefly to the D-Labs Adventure Pass? I don't know if I understood correctly. Do you need that pass to play the game, or can you play your games without this pass? And this pass is just an added benefit for future users.
So actually you don't need the pass in order to play the game. We didn't want to token gate the game in any way. So we definitely want to reach to the wider gaming audience, and not just the people who know how to buy NFTs, how to buy tokens, things like that. But if you do hold the D-Labs Adventure Pass, you get different benefits like early access and kind of boosters here and there with the game launch. So it's going to definitely enhance your experience. It's a game pass to add on top of the gaming layer. But you don't need the Adventure Pass in order to play.
Gotcha. Okay, that's cool. So on PC, is it going to be like you all will have your own application to play the game, or are you trying to launch across like any of the bigger platforms? Like, I don't know, like I know some people in Web3 gaming now are getting with like Epic Games, Steam, like anything of that nature. And some people are just still staying in their own lane until they can kind of figure out more of the Web3 aspects with those.
So with regulations being a bit unclear on Steam, I think Epic is a little bit more friendly. We made a decision to stay with our own launcher, so our own application. But then instead of, I guess, expanding in the PC space, we want to go cross-platform in order to reach more users. So that's the strategy and direction that we're taking. So we're probably not going to go on a market, at least not anytime this year. But after we do the mobile launch, once we focus on that, we might want to expand. But I think that would all depend on like the data and how the game turns out, how the users interact with the game, what the needs are.
Gotcha. So then, is there anything you can speak to specifically with interoperability in Web3 gaming with D-Labs?
With interoperability, I think that's not the biggest part that we're focusing on in terms of Web3. Interoperability, I think, can come in with Rumble Racing Star. There are aspects of interoperability that we're trying to bring with some of the partnered NFT projects that we're working with. So we are working with different PFP projects from Utes, Pudgy Penguins, Killer Bears, Quirkies, A Kid Called Beast. So there's some of our partners and holders of these NFTs can come into our game and get unlock special characters, use certain skins, use their profile picture inside the game. So that's one thing that we are doing with interoperability. But in terms of the game itself and the game NFTs and like interoperability across the three of our games, I think that's a little less of our focus, because I think who we're trying to target as our core audience is traditional gamers. And with our games all being very different in genre and audience, I think it makes a little less sense that with the games that we're currently building, that there is interoperability in terms of the game items that are NFTs. So I think interoperability could be something that we explore a little more down in the future as we expand on top of our existing games and kind of targeting the same kind of audience. So I think with Rumble Racing Star, a direction that we could go is a series of casual party games that are more social focused, that are kind of targeting the same audience. And there could be a lot of interoperability opportunities there. I think something that we're focusing a lot more on is in Web3 is less the interoperability, but more so on the community driven and community like interactions that are possible with the Web3 like philosophies and ideology. So what we're really trying to create, I think the main appeal that we saw in Web3 is that it creates a ground and it makes available a system that can create interest alignment between gamers and game developers, in that there are different mechanisms that can allow for data to be more transparent and actually have users own their assets and actually like not have that the value of those assets taken away by a centralized decision-making process. So I think community-driven decision-making is really important to us in terms of the game's direction, and also a way to like sustainably reward users that are really contributing to the success of the game, to the expansion of the game's ecosystem. I think Web3 really brings in the potential to reward those users in a really transparent way. So,
no, definitely. Okay, so you got into a lot there. I will just say that. So when you talk about sustainably rewarding your users, what does that look like for DLab specifically?
So I think there are systems. So we are really looking into using soulbound tokens these days. That's kind of a narrative we're exploring a lot. With soulbound tokens, I think it's definitely possible to be able to track how much engagement a user has done. And that creates a system where even like both within the game and outside of the game, we can track what users do. So if a user or if a gamer comes in, they want to bring in a bunch of their friends, we can track that. If they're like really talking about our game a lot, like on Twitter or Discord, or engaging in a lot of activities on Discord, we can track that and like get that into a like unified system that is the soulbound token that can create like a transparent way to be able to see and like track a user's engagement with the game. And with the soulbound token system, that also creates a mechanism where we can reward users based on that. So I think that's one aspect that we're kind of deeply looking into with that can really sustainably reward users.
And Is there a particular reason why you felt soulbound tokens were going to be like the best aspect for those gamers as opposed to, you know, maybe a more rare or more exclusive like NFT airdrop of that sense? For like if somebody put in enough time in the game or brought in enough users or something of that nature?
I think like that's also something that we are exploring. So that's not out of the picture in any way. But in terms of tracking like a user's engagement and kind of participation and really kind of growing the game's ecosystem as a whole, soulbound tokens are a more, I guess, a better way to measure like one user's engagement with the game.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I think with an NFT, like that is also one way to reward users, but I think it doesn't take into account all the different like things that a user can do and measure that in a more comprehensive system.
Sure. So if I understand correctly, NFTs are more so just like it's kind of once they're given over, it's there's nothing on your end for like data tracking, collection, to monitor who's. I'm saying all these words, it makes it sound bad, like you're monitoring people and tracking them, but I get what you're doing on your end of really trying to, you want to reward the players who you know are truly involved in your community and bringing more people into your community. And so I get it from that point. I understand that. So that's interesting. I don't know if I've heard anybody doing it with a soulbound token. I think it's more the traditional approach of if you're in our community and you're actually participating, you'll have either exclusive access to like certain NFTs or airdrops before other people, or just by being someone who's actively involved in the communities for a long time, or, you know, more active than other users, that's stuff that'll like by nature go to your wallet or so on and so forth. And correct me if I'm wrong, but your adventure pass is on Ethereum. Are all your games planned to be on the Ethereum blockchain? And is there a reason you picked Ethereum over like another chain?
So actually our NFT, the Adventure Pass, is on ETH, but our game related interactions. So with Rumble Racing Star, we're going to launch on Polygon. So I think for an NFT, Ethereum made a lot more sense because that's where the whole NFT market is and a lot of our partners are on ETH. So I think that made sense for NFT launch. But for games, I think with game items also like having to be traded, soulbound tokens having to be minted, a lot more interaction takes place. So I think it kind of really made sense for us to go with Polygon, and that they have an existing and established user base, infrastructure, and lower gas fees, which is really important for the users.
Yeah, I definitely, it's really fascinating to see how Polygon has become like the shift for, I'm trying to think of like a Web3 game that isn't on Polygon, unless there, well, there have been a few in Dubai I've talked to where they're, and of course, I'm blanking on the chain. It's a Dubai launched blockchain where it's like kind of like an exclusive, like they're trying to help out this chain grow. But yeah, Polygon has been the move for a lot of these companies for exactly what you said. I mean, when I think about having minted NFTs for games on Ethereum in the past and being like, I guess I'm just paying $8 in gas fees. And then now, like, I'm trying to think if I've ever paid more than a nickel, like 5 US cents for anything I've ever done on any game related to Polygon. And I'm always, it's like I can throw like $10 in my wallet and it'll be there for months because like stuff is so cheap. And so I really like that. Also, it's really fast, much faster than Ethereum. So I really like it. I have no complaints about it. I think it's been really good and been the access needed for a lot of people in Web3 gaming, especially because Ethereum always set that kind of like high barrier for a lot of people. Even if we want to look, not to pick on BAYC, but like there were some people who wanted something so bad with them they paid like $25,000 in gas fees just to get an NFT because they're like, well, the network's busy, I'm gonna pay for it. And I'm like, I can't imagine that would ever happen on Polygon, even if the network is bogged down and crazy. And so I guess with that, are you all chain agnostic, or are you open? Not that I anticipate anything better than Polygon coming for the next few years, but I know some people with their companies are like, we're always looking at other chains, looking to do other things, you know, as long as it works for like our core beliefs and what we're doing at the company. And then some people go, you know, this works for now. We're not, we'll worry about it a little bit later, because right now we're obviously focusing on other things related to the game, because this chain works, everything's going smoothly. So I didn't know if y'all are I feel like from talking to you, I feel like you're in the latter category, where you're more open to, if other things come along that you think is going to benefit your game, user base and community, you're willing to either switch or have multiple chains depending on games.
Yeah, actually Polygon has been like really great so far. We love working with the team, as well as we see that there's it's like the most obvious choice for our game right now. But I think what's most important is, the chain itself is also another, just another infrastructure layer. We see it kind of like using AWS versus like Google Cloud. It's like all kind of an infra layer. So if there is an infra layer that is more beneficial to our users and makes more sense for our game, that's definitely something we are open to exploring. But I mean, right now we have no complaints. We have no like issues where I think Polygon makes a lot of sense for us right now. So that's where we're at. But I think, as you mentioned, we are more open, and we want to go, I mean, to reach the most users, I think it makes a lot of sense to go multi-chain or cross-chain, have that outlet open for many different chains. So I think we're pretty open. We're not like actively exploring right now, but I think we make decisions based on what is best for our users, what makes the most sense for our game system.
Completely. And so with Rumble Racing Star, obviously there's some influences from Mario Kart. And then was the other one you said, the one I'm unfamiliar with, I'd never heard of it too, about Crazy Kart Racer?
It's Kart Rider.
Kart Rider. Okay. Yeah. So it seems like obviously you took some inspiration from both those games for this current for Rumble Racing Star. Mm-hmm. But with were there any other games you took inspiration from for that? And then, you know, for Meta Bullets and Space Frontier, were there other games you took inspiration from? Because when I looked at the brief like gameplay of Meta Bullets, that reminds me of like almost like a JRPG in the sense. And then Space Frontier is very much, I mean, there's no other really way to describe it other than it seems like a Space Frontier game. that really, like, I hate to say that, but that is... It really captures it well. So I wasn't sure if those other games y'all took inspiration from, you know, because everybody obviously, you know, is never trying to copy another game, but we all take inspiration from other pieces of art for our art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for sure we've referenced all, like, most of the racing games that are out in the market. We're like, even till now, like, we're comparing data from some of these other games and like structures, looking into how they kind of created that system and polished it as a reference. I think there's a lot of games that we reference, especially for Rumble Racing Star. I think we've looked at all the different racing games that we could find out there. So we definitely like look into the racing genre and get a lot of inspiration there. But I think one thing that's really unique about D-Labs is all of our three like game projects, they're the main, I guess, producers of the game. They are experts in that specific genre. So our racing game PD, he is the expert in racing games. So he was main producer for Crazy Racing Kart Rider, which is the first version of Kart Rider. And he's also created different racing games as well before he joined D-Labs. So he's really kind of been in the racing game space for a long time. So he has that expertise. And I think with Rumble Racing Star, with the racing genre expertise, like, we want to combine that with some Web3 elements, as well as the unique like social aspects that are in Rumble Racing Star. So it's really playing off of like the producer's expertise plus some new elements that we want to try out. For both Space Frontier and Metabolts as well, they all kind of come from a background of creating a similar type of game. So for Space Frontier, the producer is really an expert in like RPG game design. And producer for Metabolts is also an expert in kind of the JRPG style, like character collection game. He was producer for a game called King's Raid, which was really big in Japan. So I think our producers really have that strength. They have that expertise. And from that, there's a lot that comes with that experience. There's a lot that we are still kind of looking into other games to get inspiration, but they're really the experts in the genre. So I think that's where our games are kind of unique as well.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that's been a really really amazing and great shift to see. Again, why I feel like we're in like this golden era that I hope just continues, like, you know, on and upward for Web3 gaming. Of there was obviously, as you're familiar with, the P2E era, where it kind of felt like everyone in like the only thing you could do in Web3 gaming was kind of like, it reminds me of like reminiscent of like the early app store of like the Apple store of like the 2010s, where you're like, there's a bunch of shovelware, there's a lot more poor quality titles than quality titles. Everybody's just kind of trying to get in because they're like, well, this seems like this new emerging industry. I want to make my quick buck and then I'll just get out and do what I really want to do. And that happened for a while. And there's a lot of P2E games out there, some of which were okay and some of which were very terrible. But at the end of the day, the motivating user base was motivated to make money, obviously, playing the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, probably reminiscent of the last bull run, I feel like a lot of people made some money in that last bull run and could actually invest in their own studios, or maybe they had a previous company. I mean, I've talked to, I don't know if you're familiar with Earn Alliance out of Hong Kong. Their previous CEO was in software as a service. And once he sold that company, he's like, cool, and I can focus on like my gaming company, which is what I've wanted to do for a very long time. But same as you, background was in software development. He did that for like 20 plus years. So it's interesting to see that. And like a lot of people are basically, it's games first. They're like, well, I want to make a fun to play game, because if I don't do that, I'm not gonna be able to retain a user base. People aren't gonna want to come in and be a part of my community, part of this thing I'm trying to build. And not only that, like high quality games, and a lot of them with, instead of like terrible, not that graphics matter, I've played plenty of games with terrible graphics that are great, but it's interesting to see that some people, the shift has been like to AAA graphics, like really developing a game. It just kind of feels like that bleed over effect from traditional gaming in all the best ways. Of people actually structured to go like, well, this is how we develop a game in traditional. This is what we look at. This is how we're trying to bring in users and retain things. This is how we're trying to make it fun to play, engaging. All good things, I would say, that have finally made their way into Web3 gaming market. And so it's, again, I get that feeling from looking at the quality of the games y'all are trying to put out, from talking to you, from reading about you, that it is, you're very much in that realm with these other great gaming companies, where it's trying to make a fun to play game first, trying to make it engaging for the user, trying to make it something they want to come back to, with obviously additional benefits that rain down, so and so forth, in the form of your Game Pass, NFTs, airdrops, soulbound tokens. So I think that's a great place to be, and I think it's really great to see this shift going on. Again, I really just hope it continues onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I think we're all waiting for the Angry Birds to come out in Web3.
I totally agree. Yeah. And that's what I'm waiting for, is like some of the bigger players to come in. Because obviously I feel like, you know, Ubisoft's trying their own thing. Epic kind of has their own thing going. But I feel like everybody else is kind of like simmering in the background now. We're waiting for someone from traditional to make like their big launch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think right now, like around this time is, I think people have been building for the past like years, months, and this is kind of around the time when actually like the people who have been seriously building are kind of bringing some games to launch. So it's kind of an exciting time, and we're excited to see like who gets it right, hopefully us. But even if it's someone else who makes that big like first win, then like it's all like kind of follows for the whole industry to like come. So we're all like kind of here at DLabs Games, like, we definitely want, we're working really hard for our game to be the next hit, be the next Angry Bird. That's what we're aiming for, but also rooting on everyone else who's building for the Web3 game market to, like, come to life.
Yeah, no, totally. So I know we've covered, like, a good amount of it, but I didn't know, we kind of, like, interspersed between a lot of stuff. I didn't know if there's anything in particular we miss that you want to bring up that you feel makes your projects at DLabs, like, vastly different from others, if anything. It doesn't have to be. It could just be what we've talked about. You know, you want to make a high-quality game to user-generated for your community. And if any of those differences you're specifically trying to bring to your community.
I think one thing that we really want to highlight is that we are really focusing on, like, building premium games. I think I've been mentioning this a lot. And what we are really, I think we are pretty unique in that we approach this in a really cautious way so that we can get it right, get a sustainable system in place. So we're kind of launching in different stages. So with open beta, I think the first step is to, because we want to bring quality games to the Web3 scene as well, we are bringing in kind of our Web2 expertise in terms of making a good quality game. So what we're really focusing on with open beta is actually getting the retention data, getting that data right, and kind of fixing pieces so that the game is actually fun and sticky for the users to enjoy. And I think like the Web3 elements kind of come in on a later stage, because I think we need to have a user base that will continue and play the game and have fun. That's not just from the Web3 space, but also from traditional gaming who will potentially convert. So we're really, like, trying to make a fun game in that we follow the processes of Web2. And I think one dangerous thing that a lot of projects have done in the past is to launch a token too early when they're not really ready. And this brings a lot of users, and there's a big marketing effect that can be made, but this also ruins the data that we have to see in order to polish the game so that the game is right and fun. So I think our approach here at DLabs is really focusing in on the data, and we really have a data-driven approach into, like, polishing the game so that we know where users leave, where users fall out, all the funnels, and we are tracking all that data. And by tweaking it after open beta, seeing how users actually interact with the game, polishing it so that we have a really solid base, and then kind of bringing in all the different Web3 elements later for the users who do stay and who are sticky. That's kind of our strategy and kind of our process of, like, getting this Web3 game and getting this game right, to say, yeah.
Well, and it's funny you talk about token launch, because token launch or NFT launch, it's a big driver of that is simply just FOMO, fear of missing out, for a lot of people. And so I've seen plenty of, I don't want to say projects that don't deserve attention, but projects that have nothing to show but a roadmap. And promises the moon, unfortunately, gets all the funding. And the bigger thing is, a lot of times it's unlike somebody who, you all have so many experienced people on your team that, you know, if there's a hiccup, maybe you don't understand or someone else doesn't understand. I feel like there's someone else on your team who's like, well, I've run into this plenty of times in my career doing this. This is how we usually deal with it. And this, we can approach it that way. And if we want to approach it a different way, whatever. But at least somebody has an approach. Whereas I feel like in a lot of these ones that are relying on FOMO, they hit a problem and everybody's like, I've never experienced this. I don't know how to solve this. And so it delays a lot of things. And you'll see a lot of times people get in for more than they bargain for. And we're really just trying to make a quick buck and get on and out, and then figure it's like, well, we'll get all the money, we'll see if there's hype, then we'll figure out all that other stuff, rather as opposed to being like, we actually have a legitimate plan and roadmap or way to get to that stuff. Assuming we get funding and interest, we'd love to go that route. If not, I guess it won't happen, you know. So I definitely think token launches are, I'm not saying they can't I've seen them operate well in some games now. And the way I've seen it operate better now is it's almost like it's interior to the game only. And it's supposed to be like if your weapon or a skin pack or something is an NFT, the tokens are earned by playing the game, much like maybe EXP. And you can use then tokens to upgrade your items or NFTs. So it's almost like there's a token in place, but it's not something where you're like, I can play the game and cash out. It's like, well, technically, if you use the tokens in the game to upgrade your weapon or something, and then I guess you could sell the weapon and technically maybe it's more valuable because you upgraded it so much. Sure. But the main point of the token is simply to operate as an inner economic system to allow for users to get more benefit out of simply what they're already doing, which is playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing we're most focusing on is how to drive users back to the game, how to make game the main focus, and how to like really reward the gamers and the contributors, and have that focus less on like the token or the hype or the FOMO. I think that's kind of that's a very appealing approach, but I think that's not the one that's right for a project that's really serious about the product and getting the core right.
It's definitely not a sustainable approach. And I think, unfortunately, for projects that are legitimate, like yourself, it would almost, even if you had the best of intentions, I think it leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth, unfortunately, that I would say the approach you're going now seems to be the, seems to now, whereas, you know, FOMO was the traditional approach for a long time in this respect. I'd say the approach you're going now is now the traditional approach, which is good. I'm really glad to see that with these companies where it's making a high quality game. I'm making sure that the community is going to want to play it, retain it, user, because it's the only qualm I've heard is I had a guest a few episodes ago who is like, the only thing he, and I don't agree or disagree with him, but I thought it was interesting. He's like, the only thing I don't like about the Web3 gaming space is there's too much harp on the community, where he's like, sometimes I feel like these gaming companies put all their power to the community instead of going, well, it's an even keel balance, almost like we're going to create this game. We're going to lead. We're definitely going to take your input and bring that in. And I think he was referring more to like when there's like DAOs in place, whereas like sometimes the gaming companies create a DAO and kind of yield power to the community. So even if there's stuff they don't want to do, if the community votes on it, they have no more control. But I think the way y'all are doing it is the better, more traditional approach, which just sounds like you're going to have your open beta, collect the feedback about maybe what does and doesn't work for your game, go back in, fine tune it, tweak it, so that when you have launch, you're like, this is what our community wants, this is what people want to play. But at the end of the day, we're still the creators, like we're the gaming company, we're the ones making it.
But I mean, for us as well, we want to create systems where kind of like a DAO, like where we get the community's input and kind of implement that in our game as well. So I think it's two tracks. So we see the data, we do what we do best in terms of polishing the game. But for things that the community would want to participate in, like, I guess, for example, maybe like what the next character will look like or what this next skin is going to be, like we want to give power to the community to decide on a lot of different things that we're working on as a company and kind of follow through on that. So that's, I think it's a two-way thing. Some things that we rely on data and we trust the data because that's also coming from the users. That's, I think we see that as a different way of users like voicing out like, oh, what is really good and what is really bad. I think our approach is that us as game developers, we have our expertise, but like we really never know until the game is out and the data is out. We see how the users interact with the game. So I think that's one way that we see like users' interaction. The other way, like we also do wanna like really enhance that community value in getting users' input to like, oh, what we want to see next in the game. We want to follow through on that.
Yeah, and that's all reasonable stuff, I would agree. And it's funny you bring up being a developer, because I've heard that frequently from developers. If they're like, if there's one thing I wish I could do for my game, it's they're like, I wish I could get a raw look at it, because you get so immersed in it. It's to a point where you're like, I don't, Maybe your vision at the beginning for what a user would look at it raw, you had that. You're like, at this point, you're like, I just know it so well and so intricately. There's no way for me to view this rawly. So again, like you said, they're like, I put it out there and I'm trying to get other people's opinions and see how they view it to go, oh yeah, like this worked, that didn't work, or like everything worked, lined up and, you know, operated properly as I wanted. But I frequently heard that of people being like, you know, especially when people rave about a game, they're like, yeah, I wish I could look at it that way, but I can't. I've been working on this game for like 4 or 5 plus years. Like, I know it's in and outs. I would love to be able to see it and experience what you're experiencing. They're like, it's just not possible as a game developer. So that is something where I always thought was interesting and I feel a little bit sad for, because I'm just like, ah, so one of the, I don't want to say a pitfall of game developing, but one thing that is not frequently discussed, it seems, is, you know, people are like, that's why you'll see, I feel like a lot of developers are like always loving and getting inspired by other people's games, because that's like kind of their opportunity to have that raw, fresh look at someone else's game, but still think about it from a game development perspective.
Mm, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's so easy, like once you've been working on it for so long, to kind of get in the midst of it and not be able to get a fresh view. But I think that's why we really value like data and user feedback. And that's what we want to rely on.
Sure. So then we kind of briefly talked on like the future of like, you know, Web3 gaming and NFTs, but, you know, some people have been like, it's the future, it's how everything is going. Whereas other people feel like it's more like a unique ecosystem to complement traditional gaming. Mm-hmm. Where do y'all feel you fall on that spectrum?
Well, I think it's, well, for sure, I think that it's where gaming is going to go. And I think that market is going to be really big. That's why we're really immersed in like this system. I think we kind of see it similar to, let's say like how free-to-play came about, like in the beginning. Like I think as an analogy, like I think it's the same with like all the new kind of systems that come about. Like mobile gaming was really new and there was a lot of like very simple or really bad quality games in the beginning. With free-to-play, I think it was the same, that in the beginning people had a lot of flashback with free-to-play and like the specific like monetization mechanisms that free-to-play came with, like there was a lot of negative feedback in terms of that as well. There were games that were not really like high quality. I think like it's going to be the same for Web3 gaming. I think it's a different way that people will be interacting with the game. And I think the market is going to be really big. Kind of like how, even though now a really big portion of the market size right now is dominated by free-to-play, like still package games, console games, like those still exist and are still like doing really well. The big titles are really thriving. I think what I see like in Web3 gaming is kind of a position in between, like what you mentioned, kind of like free-to-play, like it's going to be a really big sector of where gaming, like the gaming scene will go. But I don't think that's going to get rid of any like traditional like free-to-play mechanisms or package game console games. They're still gonna exist, but I think it's going to be like kind of a coexisting structure, but we definitely see the market like growing really big for the Web3 gaming scene because it creates different like interest alignment mechanisms between the developer, the game, and the gamer. So,
oh yeah, definitely. And what's funny is I could see a lot of people just coming over to Web3 gaming who don't even care about any of the Web3 mechanics. There's just simply a game they're interested in playing. And they, you know, especially if like we've discussed your game and other games included, where you can play the game without the Web3 mechanics, it's people are, that's great. You have users, you have people generated who want to continue to be a part of the community and play the game, and they don't have to care about or know any of that stuff. So it's like interesting, we're in this hybrid approach now where a lot of the bigger, better companies that I've seen in Web3 gaming take that approach because they realize that the markets are kind of running parallel to one another and sometimes bleed over into one another. But more often than not, people are kind of in one lane or the other.
So I think taking that approach really opens up your opportunities for your community base, you know, generating users, really allowing you to be what you want to be at the end of the day, which is a fun to play game that you want to generate users while being allowed to be like, I get to utilize this unique opportunity and technology with the Web3 space and blockchain to bring enhancements or added layers to my already end goal of making a fun to play game. So I would agree with you and say that I think it is going to continue to grow over the years. I'm going to be really shocked if it doesn't, because just seeing how much it's blown up in the last 3 years, I can only imagine in another, you know, three, let alone 10, what will be different, where it goes. I mean, I always say this, I always think about, I'm like, you know, I never saw coming the idea of tokenizing game assets for NFTs. And I don't know who originally did that. I've tried to track down who originally did that, you know, just some history sleuthing, who originally did that concept and made it. And I always wonder in gaming, whether it's going to be the next step in that technology or something, what's going to be the next, you know, what's going to be the next thing that gets garnered in that actually benefits a lot of the users and its people. It's something we all think about inherently. Cause I would argue owning your in-game assets was something we thought we had inherently. You know, if I buy a skin in a traditional game or a weapon, like I'm like, oh, I own it. But somebody's like, yeah, but what about when you're done playing the game? You're like, oh, I mean, I own it in that game. I can't do anything with it outside of there. So now the idea of being able to go, well, I own it in the game. If I want to sell it or be done with it, I can. Or just like, I was thrilled with Gods Unchained when it was like, I was a big Magic the Gathering fan. And when I was like, oh, just like I could sell cards I wasn't interested in, now I could do the same, but in a digital NFT space, I was like, well, I was playing plenty of card games like Gwent and stuff where I had no value in the cards I collected. So I just think it's an interesting technological piece that allows me to have the freedom as a user to go, I want to keep these things, or, you know, I don't, but maybe I only make a few bucks, maybe make a few hundred bucks, who knows, but I could pour that into another game. Whereas before, and still for the rest of my life, I'm usually the one paying for the game and putting my time in the game. And in my opinion, the reward I get is not money, it's enjoyment of the game. That's why I want to keep playing the games from the creators and the series and the companies. So I always say that. I'm like, it'll be interesting to see the next piece of technology in Web3 and blockchain that really spurs. And I don't know when that's coming, but I feel like when it happens, I'm going to be like, that makes total sense. But right now, I'm like, I can't even imagine what it would be. So what do you think about traditional gaming companies getting more involved in Web3? Because, you know, we talked about Ubisoft a bit. Razer launched their own Web VC firm called their Incubator. We had the former CTO of Epic. I believe he's still working with Yuga Labs on their gaming stuff. So, I mean, what do you think of all that? Is it a good thing for the space? Do you feel like it's kind of just bringing more attention to the space? Do you think it's a bad thing? Just curious.
I mean, I think most definitely it's a good thing that people are coming in. I think it's more proof that there are more people like growing that believe in this space, believe that this will bring kind of a new next wave in the gaming space and how games are created, how like users interact with the game. So I think it's just even more proof that Web3 gaming is coming, and it will be pretty soon now that all these big companies are jumping in.
Yeah, I would argue it kind of gives a good signal that if you have these bigger players, or people we can even say from bigger, you know, traditional companies wanting to jump in, there must be some merit to it, right? If they're willing to explore it.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely believe there's something there. It confirms our beliefs that these big companies are also jumping in.
Sure. Me too. Well, then I only have one more question for you. And that's, do you have any advice you'd give younger folks, you know, maybe starting the Web3 project or starting their Web3 journey to maybe, you know, hopefully get to the same place you're at?
I think I have only one thing that for us at D-Labs is really important, is to focus on like really what the users are getting out of this, and kind of just having like a really strong, solid product is the most important. And I think in the Web3 space, it's really easy to kind of get swept away by all the like I guess, upside that you can get by just creating hype and not really a core like strong product. And it's really easy to get kind of attracted to those things that you can like quickly like pump and dump. But I think it's just really important to focus on the product and focus on the users. And with blockchain, like I think it doesn't really, with blockchain and Web3, I think those words are like, I think it brings a different connotation, but I think what people should really focus on is why using this technology will bring a better product. And that's what we're really, really focusing on at D-Labs. And I think that's what I would advise everyone who is working on a blockchain like Web3 product to think about and keep thinking about, like, so why this technology can bring like a better experience for the users, why this product makes sense, like why blockchain makes sense for that specific product.
No, good point. Good point. Well, Quinn, that's all the questions I have for you. Is there anything you want to note in closing that we didn't cover?
I guess one just last thing about Rumble Racing Star and the timelines coming up. So on the 11th of October, so pre-registration for our open beta will be open live on our website and also accessible through our Twitter and Discord. And open beta is going to be coming up around end of October, early November. So I think it would, I just wanted to give that a shout out on the dates and that coming up.
Definitely. Yeah. Rick had given me all the info because I had expressed my interest in playing. So I'll definitely be a part of that. And I will definitely have all the info people need to get to that in the show notes. So I'm looking forward to seeing it launch and people getting to play it, myself included, as a big Mario Kart fan.
Sounds good. If you have any feedback on the game, please feel free to let us know. We would love to hear thoughts.
Okay. It looks great right now. It runs very smooth. It has all the, you know, elements of Mario Kart, drifting, item use, all that. So I don't know if I'll have any feedback other than I had a fun time playing it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, Quinn, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you speaking with me and speaking about D-Labs and looking forward to everything y'all do there.
Yeah, thank you so much for hosting today. It was a great time talking to you.
Well, friends, that's another episode down. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would really appreciate you rating it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you can rate and wherever you listen to and get your podcast. It would mean the world to us and help get this podcast to people who truly are involved in Web3 gaming, blockchain, and cryptocurrency and want to learn more and stay on top of these emerging technologies. If you have any queries, want to reach out about any collaborations or advertisements, as well as want to reach out with any improvements you think we could make on the podcast, please email us at theweb3gamer@proton.me. We would love to hear from you and take every response very seriously. Take care and keep gaming, my friends.